Okay. Today is the 24th of April, 2018, Tuesday class. So let us now compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, the virya, then mindfully we shall commence our puja. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Guansuin Pusa. Namo Guansuin Pusa. Namo Guansuin Pusa. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipano Bhagavato Savakasango Sanghang Namami. Okay, you all can be seated. Yeah. Then turn to page 1 of the Vandana. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Adinadana veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Kamesu michachara veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majapamadatana veramani sikha padang samadhiyami. Now we will chant the padipa puja, offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena dipena tamadangsina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonodang. Ganda sambarayutena dupena hang suganghina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bhajana mutamang vanna ganda guno petang etang kusuma santatin pujayami munindasa siri pada sarorohe pujemi buddhang kusumena nena punnena matena cha hotu mokang pupang milayati yata idang me kayo tata yati vinasa bhavang adivasetu nobante paniyang parikapitang anukampa upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivasetu nobante pale parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivasetu nobante bojana parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang. Now let us chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Significance of offering of light to the Buddha. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition as soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of oral aspiration. By the power of all these merits, born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya be further strengthened until they become balas or power, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let's pay homage to Triple Jam. Vedang Pujami. Dhammang Pujami. Sanghang Pujami. Okay. You all can be seated. Then I think Hui Rong want me to make an announcement to remind you all. This coming Sunday is her house, Dana. So she will send out the location and all those things again this Thursday, so that for okay methods who can make it, you try to attend because she's got too few people. We understand 7 of them are up in the Cameron Highlands. They will only be back on Sunday. I don't know what time, so may not be so early. So very likely they may not be in time to attend. But don't worry. The few, the merrier. The few, the better. The more, the merrier. But the few, the better, because it can be informal. So we can have our time allocated to everybody. When the group is small, it's always better because new things can happen. Last time I remember, somebody used to ask me, "But Theo, what if nobody turn up? And nobody turn up also okay?" Then I said, "If there is at least one who wants to listen, who is sincere, one is enough." I said, "You know, when I started the Thursday class in Subang, three of them were discussing with me. Then after Ingvi made the request, I think Mi Fong also finally consented, so use her house. Then she asked me the first question. Two of us only know how. I say, if you are serious, one person also, I will come. Then you know what happened? Mi Fong said, I will get Sui An to come also. So they're supposed to have three. But Sui An very smart. He go and text a few. So the first day, I remember, we got 6. Then after that, it grew. It grew until so big. So now, very fast now, it's almost, I think, coming to 10 years already. The Thursday class in Subang. I remember it started in the year 2008, if I'm not wrong. So don't worry about the number. Actually, the less, the better. More personal. Then you all can ask what you want. But you don't worry. Sure, a lot of food. Today also, we are less men, more share. We are 7 of them went up to Guan Yin Qi. They attended the 7-day ceremony of Guan Yin. I don't know whether birthday or what. Was it a birthday or just a Guan Yin meditation? Guan Yin. It's not four. Yeah, la, there is a standard receipt. But this time they told me they are going for Guan Yin Qi. Pamasuri cannot be wrong. But don't worry. Whether four Qi or Guan Yin Qi also same. They are there to do the chanting. To develop the faith, the cultivation and all those things. And they have affinity that place. They have gone there many times. So this one is also one of the usual ones. Then later on, August, Yun Chan will take you all to what? Ma Chab. What's the name of the place? Wat Ma Chab. I find it very difficult to pronounce. I remember there's a Wat, there's a Chab. Wat Ma Chab. Acha Anand's place. So this time I was told, Yun Chan said maybe 15 of you. Oh, okay. You know, that day, I think at Polian's house, she was discussing with Mi Fong. Then they count. At first they said 11. Then they said, oh no, maybe 15. So now I don't know what is the latest figure. Oh, some of them back out. So if you find it beneficial, you should go. Because sometimes Dhamma is very, very strange. Meant to be, will be, like during the early day of my cultivation. The nature just know, it just understand the condition come, then it just go, it just travel. But after a while, when you understand already, you don't just travel for travel's sake. Then for a period, you no need to travel. But then later on, the condition evolve again. Then my nature realized it has helped me quite a lot. That's why I reflected. I say if there's condition, I will take Kayanamita on spiritual trip. But this spiritual trip, like what I have explained before, it can be very beneficial when you have the faith, the understanding, and the affinity. Sometimes you don't know why you have to go. But when you are there, you will start to understand. Well, many things will happen. And a lot of our Kayanamita has gone through all this. Then later on, as you develop further understanding, deeper understanding through the cultivation, your faith becomes very different. Then wherever you go, you will be able to have the ability to feel that place, the sensitivity and all those things. Then that faith, the understanding, and the very special nature that you have developed, it will bring forth the causes and conditions for many things to happen. So spiritual trips are useful, but you have to feel it. When your heart can feel it and you know there is condition, then you should follow the sign, accord and flow. Because the sign will come on. Very strange. Sometimes you're not supposed to go, but it keep on coming back to remind you. Or triggering of condition. And then you know already it's meant to be. You have to go. So you learn how to understand all this. Because this is part of cultivation, part of nature's condition. When it's meant to be, things will arise, condition will arise. And you have to have that sensitivity. Otherwise your thought take over. The thinking always take over. Then the thinking will reason. Why must I go? Go for what? Then sometimes the opposite. No? Oh yeah, they told me very good. No. So out of greed you go. You may not benefit much. But if you hear about it, let's say, then inside like nothing, then you wait for a while. I can tell you, if it's meant to be, condition will arise again. Or somebody else will tell you. Or through another condition, the same thing will happen. Then you know already it's meant to be. Normally for my nature, if at least two conditions must arise, at least, then I know it's meant to be. That's why during the early days I will go. But later on, when I don't need to go, then I normally just let it be. Then the third condition will come. When the third condition comes, I know already I have to go. Sometimes I go not because of me anymore. It's because of certain reason. Then I will know. Then like spiritual trip and all those things, it has its condition. Meant to be, will be. And how it happened also, everything will fall into place. Like that day, Brother Sia's condition before the wake. Very funny, you know. That day, that afternoon, I received the sign. First one that contacted me, I don't feel anything. Yeah, it's just a WhatsApp message. Brother, are you going to see Brother Sia? I say, I'm not sure. I say, see how. I will keep you informed. Then after that, Sui Han called me. You know. Then Mi Feng also text me. You know. Another, my uni BJF friend, last time in MU together, the husband passed away. I think Sister Lian Jin's husband. Some of you all may know her. Sister Lian Jin? Oh, you all don't know her. She is very close to this Jiu Jin, I think. Sister Jiu Jin, Ananda Fong's wife. You all don't know them. Oh, they are the pioneers. Huh? Jiu Jin and Xiu Jin or Jiu Jin, I forgot earlier. The other one is Lian Jin, Sister Lian Jin. We also met her once in Sumeru. They were together. Sumeru was, Lian Jin was there. She used to go there on weekends. So the husband quite young. That's why this week, 1 week, a lot of them, the Sister Lian Jin's husband, I think also around that age 60 or around there. the husband also passed away. Then Brother Sia also 60. Then our sister SK also 62. All happened simultaneously. It's for you to recall to mind and reflect. So that one, very strange. When they call me, I said, yeah, Lian Jin, I remember her. I said, but the husband, I only heard of his name, but don't really know. Then they say they want to attend the wake. They're supposed to wait for SGPA chanting and go in the evening. I said, cannot. We have Tuesday class. Last Tuesday. So I said, Tuesday class, cannot. Oh, then he suggests go earlier. Go earlier. Then all of a sudden, Sui An also suddenly call me. You want to visit Brother Sia first or not? I say, yeah, I want to because there were conditions. So I straight away say, okay, arrange it. Then they arrange it before. I supposed to go to Lian Jin's husband, then only go there. He reversed it. He say we go clang, finish off, then only we go the other one. So by the time we go to clang, we settle everything, and then we finish at about 4 p.m. So we're supposed to go. Normally, 2-3 hours, more than enough time. That day was raining like anything. So on the way to this Shalom where the sister Lian Jin's husband wake, when we were traveling, it was so heavy in the rain. The traffic was very heavy. Then it took us almost 45 minutes to reach the place nearby she lived. Then my son called. He forgot to bring the key out. He has to take a flight at 10 p.m. So we have to come back. So I make a decision to come back. I said, never mind. No condition. We forget about the week. So we decided to come back. By the time we reached here, it was just enough time for him to come in, pack his thing, did all the thing, then call the taxi, then don't even have time to go for dinner with us. Then he went to the airport. So meant to be. So what happened was, that day was the day, the last day I can visit Brother Sia. And because he was a Kayanamita and they got affinity, and Nancy was very happy. Because I didn't really pay him a visit when he was sick. But that day very funny, because of the sign, like nature's condition say, I have to be there. So I went there. And everything went on well. And I spoke to Nancy. Then next to Brother Sia, I think he can hear me, the consciousness. Then after that, the next day, he passed away peacefully. Yeah. Peacefully. That's why, if one day later also cannot see him, ngam-ngam that day, and somehow on Tuesday, and the condition just arrived. That's why I say it's meant to be. And I went there, I can feel the energy was very good, the house. The devas and all those things were very good. And everything was so conducive. Then later on, at the wake or so, instead of 3 days, they leave the body for 5 days. So it was a good condition. Then I told Sui An, instead of Friday night, we better go Saturday. Because there's a school opposite his house, you remember? And the school, because Saturday, holiday, no traffic, no children, so we can have the whole quiet morning. Then we did our chanting there too, and our sharing. Then we had some good time with Nancy and family. So that was the condition. Then after that, Susan came. Susan joined us. Then Susan invited us for lunch. So everything went on well. So if you have the Dhamma, you will have the condition. And you will understand. And everything that happened, not by chance. Like the Buddha said, there are causes and conditions behind. And you will know. Meant to be will be. Not meant to be, will not be. Then, because all these three happened together, so what we did was, Padma Suri was at the Cameron Highland Retreat. So he texted me. He said, Pratik, we are doing for Brother Sia. Of course, using Kayamita Fan also. For their blessing, I will say. Because we make offering, donation. Then he said, want to include SK Hong or not? I said, yeah, you might as well do. Then after that, Sui An, very smart. Said, Pratio, what about Anne's sister? So I said, yeah, one of the Kayanamita, do lah. So they included your sister. Oh yeah. Your sister's name, Zhong Sui Yin, Sui Yin is you, Your sister is what? Yun Yin, I saw it there. Then Sui An, very thorough, no? Brought you any more Kayaramita who has passed away. I said no more already. Inside my heart, you want more. Don't be so fast. But I realized one thing. The one in Singapore, the SK Hong, when he came to my class, he already got 4-stage cancer. She knew, but she didn't tell me. I also didn't know. Yeah, the sister was very grateful because of what happened to the sister. I think she also full of gratitude because she come to know the teaching really well after he met me, after he attended the class and did the transcript. Because earlier on, he said he attended many classes, 6 Patriarch Platform Sutta, cannot understand. Read many of this book, also cannot understand. But the moment he attended the class because of Sister Lee at the Sunday session, she became very different, the faith very strong, and she volunteered to do the transcript. That's how all this happened. Then for Anne's sister, you all know, she already got the weak heart and all those problems long ago, I remember, during the earlier our spiritual tree. He can't even stay on the first floor or second floor. He always asks for the ground floor room, preferably, and all those things. But she survived very long. She has some heart issue. Not heart, what was it? Quite complicated. Never mind, I know. But she survived very well. She actually get to live a very good life. She's very happy. After he understand the Dhamma, after this, I can see the joy in her. And the faith make her strong, actually. What was her name already? Sally. I cannot remember. So because of that, the condition is there. Then what I want to tell you is, if you don't have any problem, I mean not the serious type of sickness problem. Sometimes if you got sickness, you come, you tell me early, I can help you, and you can do it yourself, and you will recover too. But if you don't have the faith, then very difficult. You don't have the faith to actually do it. But what I'm trying to tell you is, if you come as a normal human being, even if you have some depression earlier on or what, that one no problem. But the moment you understand this teaching, you will live very long, I tell you. Much longer than normal people. Because you don't have stress. You don't have problem. Understand? Can. Use that mic. So we forget about meditation. Today we straight away, that's why I say less people better one. Turn the bottom. I purposely loosen it. No. The screw one, the bottom. Tighten it on the bottom. Because otherwise the battery run away. Okay.
No, just to share something.
Yes.
Sally. Every time she see me, she will only tell me this. Don't waste time, Sue. Don't waste time.
Sadhu. Very good advice. Very good. Sadhu. Then, were you his roommate at the retreat or not? No. You saw them. That spiritual retreat, normally, you are the roommate, isn't it? Yeah. So, I was told there are some Kayamita who actually quite close to Sally. I forgot already. They used to come and tell me. And they all find her very, very interesting and very nice. So these are the conditions that can allow things to happen. Then because this line, you have the affinity to be together as Kayanamita. So in future, I can tell you, you will be very surprised because a lot of these Kayanamita, their nature will be very different. later on. So you may not know. Maybe in the distant future, if you are not so diligent, you didn't progress so well. When this Kanyamita, their nature, take over, they may come back, they may be like me, teaching you again. So if you are one of them, you will have the condition to be a blessing to many. So the beauty and advantage or benefits of Kanyamita is tremendous. So cultivate affinity, understand not? Have joy, have love, then develop friendship, understand not? Kanyamita are Dhamma friends, understand not? Friendship sincerely, with understanding, with joy. Then be kind, be generous, help people. And sometimes you have the condition, pay for their whatever breakfast or whatever, or tea, or even dinner. Because these are the way where you can cultivate affinity. Then I know in Kanyamita all fighting to pay. Some, they scared not fast enough. They always say, my wife very fast. But it depends on the condition. If there is condition, things will happen and it will just unfold. So these are the thing that is not in the scripture, not in the text. Only cultivator who have gone through all this can share this with you. So affinity is one thing that you need to learn. Especially you take the Bodhisattva way, you will learn a lot of this. Then you will understand a lot of condition, how things are meant to be. Then how phenomena, how nature create its affinity, and how things can arise and happen, just like that, without you even expecting it. Then sometimes it can be so marvelous, the way it happened, really. It is way beyond what you can expect or think. That's why they say mind-boggling. Is it the correct word? Mind-boggling. Your mind cannot understand. It's like, you feel, oh, how can it be like that? It's beyond what you can even anticipate, or even as, like I say, like you plan also, you cannot plan until it can just happen like that. Everything just falls into place. And when you have the good nature, it's all meant for the better. Meant to be will be. Okay? Anybody else want to share anything? Otherwise we can still have some time for meditation. Oh, still got time. Okay, I give you 15 minutes. Okay, we're off the light. Then we can have 15 minutes of meditation. Then I will ring the bell after the 15 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sujupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Samichipatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yadidang Chattari Purisa Yukani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaniyo Anuttarang Punyaketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Gem. Padang Pujayami Damang Pujayami Sanghang Pujayami. Okay, y'all can be seated. Yeah? We will continue from where we stop. Page 281. The Buddha and his teaching. So we were at this chapter. Chapter 15, we were on page 281. Okay, this topic is on, is Buddhism a religion? So this is the subheading. Then they quoted, the author quoted Professor Rhys Davids. Davids writes, "What is meant by religion? The word, as is well known, is not found in language, not related to our own, and its derivation is uncertain. Cicero, in one passage, derived it from the word re and lego, and held that its meaning was the repetition of prayers and incantation. Another interpretation derives the word from re and lego and makes it original sense, makes its original sense that of attachment, of a continual binding that is no doubt to the gods. A third derivation connects the word with lex and explains it as a law abiding, unscrupulous, the conscientious frame of mind. So these are the various interpretations. Then the author went on to say, Buddhism is not strictly a religion in the sense in which that word is commonly understood, for it is not a system of faith and worship, owning any allegiance to a supernatural god. So most religion, they are related to an almighty God. In fact, many religions have that assumption. Even the Christian religion, the Islam, and also many Hindu religions, they have their basis of a supernatural God, a supernatural being, or the almighty entity. Buddhism does not demand blind faith from its adherents. You know the difference between blind faith and true faith, eh? Anybody don't know the difference? What is blind faith? Huh? Blind faith is what? Means your faith is based on? Ah, just believe in that. Because people tell you their religion need you to believe. So you didn't even investigate and find out. You just believe. Yeah. So that one is blind faith. But if your faith comes through an understanding, then it's not blind faith. Then that faith is born of an understanding. Mm. That's the reason why the author say, yeah, Buddhism does not demand blind faith from its adherents. Hence, mere belief is dethroned, and for it is substituted confidence based on understanding. He used the word knowledge. Yeah? It should be based on understanding. It is possible for a Buddhist to entertain occasional doubt until he attains the first stage of sainthood called Sotapatti, when all doubts about the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha are completely resolved, one becomes a genuine follower of the Buddha. Only after attaining this first stage of sainthood. You look at the notes, note 2. An ordinary adherent may be genuine enough as a follower, but he is not a sharer by realization of the Buddha Dhamma. So at least if you are a sotapan, you can have at least some form of understanding. That's why out of the 10 fetters that bind the living being to this world, the first 3, will be severed. And the first most powerful is self-delusion. The Buddha called it Sakyaditi. This is the first of the 10 fetters. Then the second one is beliefs in rites and ritual, superstition and other things. Then the third fetters is when you don't have faith in the Triple Gem. When you don't have understanding or affinity with the Triple Gem, you still doubt. So this third factor can only go away when your faith in the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha become unshakable. The confidence of a follower of the Buddha is like that of a patient in respect of a noted physician, or of a student regarding his teacher. Although a Buddhist seeks refuge in the Buddha as his incomparable guide and teacher, who indicates the path of purity, he make no surveil. How to pronounce this word? Surveil. Surveil surrender. What's the meaning of this word? Yeah, anybody know the meaning? Surveil. Means he don't easily surrender, I think. A Buddhist does not think that he can gain purity merely by seeking refuge in the Buddha or by mere faith in him. It is not within the power even of the Buddha to wash away the impurities of others or the sin of others. Strictly speaking, one can neither purify nor defile another. The Buddha as teacher may be instrumental, but we ourselves are responsible for our own cultivation or purification. Then in the Dhammapada, the Buddha said, by oneself alone is evil done, by oneself is one defiled, by oneself alone is evil avoided, by oneself alone is evil purified. Purity and impurity depend on oneself. No one can purify another. So here, the statement that the Buddha spoke need to be understood. Eh? When he said oneself, what is he referring to? Eh? What is that oneself? By oneself alone is evil done. What is the entity, the oneself? Yeah? What is that? Huh? It comes back to the question, who are you? What are you? So when the Buddha said, by oneself is evil done. And by oneself is one defiled. And by oneself alone is evil avoided. By oneself alone is one purified. What is this one, that oneself or one that the Buddha is referring to? Huh? You got two aspects of you, isn't it? One of it is? One aspect of you is what? The form and mind, that's the human being. And that one, the Buddha say, is not you. But what did I tell you? What is that one? It may not be you, but it's connected to your nature. But this is karmically conditioned from my mind, from your karmic nature. Do you understand? It's not permanent. It's not real. It's not you. But this one is connected to your nature. And this one comes from your karmic nature. So when he say, by oneself alone is evil done, means by that form and mind. You understand? Huh? That form and mind, without wisdom, without right view, what will happen? Dhammapada verse 1 will take its course there. It will act, speak, and think with an evil mind. Then, suffering will follow. Huh? Just like the wheel that follow the hoof. So this one is what the Buddha referring to. When the form and mind, yeah, does not have wisdom. That's why this form and mind by oneself alone is evil done. Means Dhammapada verse 1 will take its course. Yeah. Then by oneself is also one defiled. Without the Noble Eightfold Path, you will defile yourself and fall. Then similarly, when you cultivate with that form and mind, by oneself alone is evil avoided. By oneself alone is one purified. So the cultivation, you need this form and mind to do it. If you are heedless, then this form and mind bring about suffering, evil. That's why the Buddha said purity and impurity depend on that form and mind. If it is connected with wisdom, then the user of this form and mind is wise, then there is only pure state of mind, purity. Otherwise, defilement will take over. Then no one can purify another. Here it means he cannot make you enlightened. Do you understand? But he can teach you the teaching, share with you the understanding, so that you can cultivate it yourself and realize the enlightenment. So this is what the Buddha meant. The Buddhist hymn is the best. Eh? No one can save you but yourself. No one can and no one may. Yeah. Okay, there we go on. Eh? A Buddhist is not a slave to a book or to any individual. Nor does he sacrifice his freedom of thought by becoming a follower of the Buddha. He is at full liberty to exercise his own free will and develop his knowledge or understanding even to the extent of attaining Buddhahood himself. For all are potential Buddhas. Naturally, Buddhists quote the Buddha as their authority, but the Buddha himself discards all authority. So this part is also very important. Eh? Because the Buddha explained to us all, is it the Dhamma or the truth that he realized was already there before him. So it's not he who own or possess this truth. But the Buddha himself, he never imposed authority on anything. He said this truth can be investigated on, because it is the truth. It was sent up to investigation, so there is no need for any authority. Authority means have power over you, control over you. Then immediate realization is the sole criteria of truth in Buddhism. Its keynote is rational understanding, samadhi, or right view. The Buddha advises seekers of truth not to accept anything merely on authority of another, but to exercise their own reasoning and judgment for themselves whether a thing is appropriate or not. On one occasion, the citizens of Kesaputta, also known as Kalamas, approached the Buddha and said that many ascetic and Brahmins who came to preach to them used to exalt their own doctrine or teaching and denounce those of others, and that they were at a loss to understand which of those worthies were right. Then the Buddha advised the Kalamas. He said, "Yes, O Kalamas, it is right for you to doubt. It is right for you to waver. In a doubtful matter or situation, wavering has arisen," remarked the Buddha, and gave them the following advice, which applies with equal force to modern rationalists as it did to those skeptic Brahmins of yesterday, or yours. The Buddha said, "Come, O Kalamas, do not accept anything on mere hearsay. There is thinking that thus have we heard it from a long time. Do not accept anything by mere tradition. There is thinking that it has been handed down through many generations or ages. Do not accept anything on account of rumors. That is by believing what others say without any investigation. Do not accept anything just because it accords with your scripture. Do not accept anything by mere supposition. Do not accept anything by mere inference. Do not accept anything by merely considering the appearance. Do not accept anything merely because it agrees with your preconceived notion. Do not accept anything merely because it seems acceptable or logical. Do not accept anything thinking that the ascetic is respected by us, and therefore it is right to accept his word. But when you know for yourself these things are immoral, these things are blameworthy, these things are censored by the wise. This thing, when performed and undertaken, conduces to ruin and sorrow. Then, indeed, do you reject them?" So, to summarize this, what the Buddha is trying to tell you is whatever advice people give to you, you have to investigate on it. If I were to follow what they tell me, will it lead to harm? Will it lead to ruin? Will it harm me and harm others? If it doesn't harm you and harm others, then there is no harm following. When you know for yourself these things are moral, these things are blameless, these things are praiseworthy by the wise, these things when performed and undertaken conduce to well-being and happiness, then do you live and act accordingly? Means you can follow. So this is written in the Anguttara Nikaya, volume 1, page 189. This wise saying of the Buddha, uttered some 2,500 years ago, still retains their original force and freshness even in this enlightened 20th century. With a homely illustration, Janasara Samuchara repeats the same counsel in different words. I will skip the Pali. We go direct to the English translation. As the wise test gold by burning, cutting, and rubbing it on a piece of touchstone, so are you to accept my words after examining them, and not merely out of respect or regard for me. The Buddha exhorted his disciples to seek the truth and not to heed mere persuasion, even by supreme authority. Now, though it be admitted that there is no blind faith in Buddhism, one might question whether there is worshipping of Buddha images and such idolatry among Buddhists. Buddhists do not worship an image expecting worldly or spiritual favor, but pay their homage or respect to what it represents. A Buddhist does not before an image. A Buddhist goes before an image and offer flower and incense not to the image, but to the Buddha. He does so as a mark of gratitude, reflecting on the virtue of the Buddha and pondering on the transiency of flowers. As understanding Buddhist, designedly make himself feel that he is in the noble presence of the Buddha, and thereby gain inspiration to emulate him. Referring to images, the great philosopher Karl Kassling writes, "I know nothing more grand in this world than the figure of the Buddha. It is the perfect embodiment of spirituality in the visible domain." Then again, Buddhists do not worship the Bodhi tree, but consider it as a symbol of enlightenment, and so worthy of reverence or respect. Though such external form of homage are prevalent among Buddhists, the Buddha is not worshipped as a god. This external object of homage is not absolutely necessary, but they are useful, and they help one to. Here they put concentrate one's attention. No, it's help to develop the faith, the composed mind, the calm and composed mind. An intellectual could dispense with them, as he could easily focus his attention on the Buddha and thus visualize him. So this one is about concentration, which is not the Buddha's teaching. For our own good and out of gratitude, we pay such homage. But what the Buddha expects from his disciple is not obeisance, but the actual observation of his teaching. It's more of learning his teaching than putting it to cultivation. Not just to express their gratitude, pay their homage, then believe. No. You need to understand it, then put it for cultivation. Just before the Buddha passed away, just before the Buddha passed away, many disciples came to pay their respect to him. One bhikkhu, however, remained in his cell absorbed in meditation. The matter was reported to the Buddha, who summoned him. And on inquiry, the reason for his absence was told, "Lord, I knew that your reverence would pass away 3 months from now. Hence, and I thought the best way of honoring the teacher was by attaining arahantship before the decease of your reverence." The Buddha extolled the praiseworthy conduct of that lawyer and this dutiful bhikkhu, saying, "Excellent, excellent. He who loves me should emulate this bhikkhu. He honor me best by cultivating my teaching best." On another occasion, the Buddha remarked, "He who sees the Dhamma sees me." Furthermore, it must be mentioned that there are no petitionary or intercessory prayers in Buddhism. However much one may pray to the Buddha, one cannot be saved. But paying respect has its virtue, is one of the meritorious actions. When you pay respect to the elders and the praiseworthy or the great beings, four things grow, the Buddha said. You will realize these four benefits. In Pali, it's called Ayu, Wana, Sukha, Palang. Ayu is long life. Wana is fair complexion. Sukha is happiness or joy. Palang is strength, spiritual and physical strength. Okay, then we read on. The Buddha does. The Buddha does not and cannot grant worldly favor to those who pray to him. A Buddhist should not pray to be saved, but should rely on himself and strive on with diligence to win his freedom and gain purity, advising his disciple not to depend on others, but to depend on oneself and to be self-reliant. The Buddha said, striving should be done by oneself or yourself. The Tathagata are only teachers. So this statement shows to you the importance of self-cultivation. The Buddha not only speaks of the futility of prayers, but also disparages a slave mentality. Instead of prayers, the Buddha emphasized the importance of meditation that promotes self-discipline, self-control, self-purification, and self-enlightenment. It serves as a tonic both to the mind and the heart. Meditation is the essence of Buddhism. In Buddhism, there is not, as in most other religions, a mighty and almighty God to be obeyed and feared. Buddhism denies the existence of a supernatural being or power, conceived as an almighty being or a causeless force. There are no divine revelation, nor divine messenger or prophets. A Buddhist is therefore not subservient to any higher supernatural power which controls his destiny and which arbitrates rewards and punishment. Since Buddhists do not believe in revelation of a divine being, Buddhism does not claim the monopoly of truth and does not condemn any other religion. Intolerance is the greatest enemy of religion. With his characteristic tolerance, the Buddha advises his disciple not to get angry, discontented, or displeased even when others speak ill of him, or of his teaching, or of his order. If you do so, the Buddha said, you will not only bring yourself into the danger of spiritual loss, but you will not be able to judge whether that this what they say is correct or not. A most enlightened sentiment, denouncing unfair criticism of other faiths, the Buddha states, it is as a man who looks up and spits at heaven. The spittum does not soil the heaven, but it comes back and defiles his own person or body. Buddhism expounds no dogma that one must blindly believe, no creeds that one must accept on good faith without reasoning, no superstition or superstitious rites and ceremony to be observed for formal entry into the fold, no meaningless sacrifice and penance for one's purification. Okay. Then there's a note to on the page before. Prayer is an activity in which I frankly confess I'm not an adept. I do not understand how men continue to pray unless they are conceived. There is a listening ear. So these are the various notes to explain what prayer is. Prayer takes the character of private communication, selfish bargaining with God. It seeks for object of earthly ambition and inflame the sense of self. Meditation, on the other hand, is developing wisdom. Or here they use self-change. Okay, next page. Buddhism cannot, therefore, be strictly called a religion because it is neither a system of faith and worship nor the outward act or form by which men indicate their recognition of the existence of a God or God having power over their own destiny, to whom obedience, service and honor are due. Karl Marx said, religion is the soul of soul. Religion is the soul of soulless condition, the heart of a heartless world, the opium of the people. Buddhism is not such a religion, for all Buddhist nations grew up in the cradle of Buddhism, and their present culture advancement is clearly due mainly to the benign influence of the teaching of the Buddha. Who is this Karl Marx? You all know that? Greatest religious critic. Yeah, he criticized religion. But he actually separate Buddhism out. he said whereas Buddhism is not such a religion. But he used very strong words. He said, all those religions that believe in God is the soul of soullessness condition. Soulless condition. And the heart of a heartless world. And the worst one is, he said, it's the opium of people. You know what is opium or not? The more you take, the more addicted you are to it. So when you believe this type of religion, I tell you, you can become addicted to it. Then you will argue with people. And you will use it with very strong, what they call, very strong mind state. Okay, we continue. However, if by religion is meant a teaching which takes a view of life that is more than superficial, a teaching which looks into life and not merely at it, a teaching which furnishes man with a guide to conduct, and that is in accordance with this inlook, a teaching which enables those who give it heed to face life with fortitude and death with serenity, or a system of deliverance from ill of life means suffering, then certainly Buddhism is a religion of all religion. So this Karl Marx seems to understand the Buddhist teaching quite well. That's why he put it in such a appropriate words. Then the next part is Buddhism an ethical system? Buddhism contains an excellent moral code, including one for monks and another one for ladies, but it is much more than an ordinary moral teaching. Morality or sila is only the preliminary stage and is a means to an end, but not an end in itself. Though absolutely essential, it alone does not lead to one's deliverance or perfect purity. It is only the first stage of the path of purification or purity. First stage on the path of purity, or purification. Beyond morality is wisdom. The base of Buddhism is morality, and wisdom is its apex. As a pair of wings of a bird are these two complementary virtues. Wisdom is like unto the man's eye. Morality is like unto his feet. One of the appellative of the Buddha is Vajracharana Sampanno, and he is endowed with wisdom and virtue, or they call conduct. Of the Four Noble Truths that form the foundation of Buddhism or the essence of his teaching, the first three represent the philosophy of the Buddha's teaching. The fourth, the ethics of Buddhism based on that philosophy. Morality in Buddhism is not found on any doubtful divine revelation, nor is it the ingenious invention of an exceptional mind, but is a rational and practical code based on verifiable facts and individual experience. In the opinion of Professor Mark Muller and the English moral, the Buddhist moral code is one of the most perfect which the world has ever known. Professor Rich Davis said, Buddhists or not Buddhists, I examine every one of the great religion system of the world, and in none of these have I found anything to surpass the beauty and comprehensiveness of the Noble Eightfold Path of the Buddha. I am content to shape my life according to that path. So this guy is quite wise. So he said, of all the moral teaching that leads to wisdom, understanding, and in this particular case is enlightenment, liberation of the mind from all suffering, he said he had checked all religions and realized the Noble Eightfold Path is the most excellent and the most comprehensive, which is very true. Actually, Noble Eightfold Path, like I explained, is very beautiful. Where it covers all aspects of life. And it includes a very comprehensive range of understanding. So when you put that into cultivation, it can lead to wisdom, awakening, realization of the supramundane. It is interesting to note that according to Buddhism, there are deeds which are ethically good and bad. Deeds which are neither good nor bad, and deeds which tends to ceasing of all deeds. Good deeds are essential for one's emancipation, but when once the ultimate goal of the holy life is attained, one transcends beyond good and bad. The Buddha said, righteous thing you have to give up. How much more the unrighteous thing? The deed which is associated with attachment means lobha, then ill will or dosa, and delusion or moha are evil. Those deeds which is associated with non-attachment are lobha, goodwill, adosa, and wisdom, panya, is wholesome. The deed of an arahant, a stainless one, possess no ethical value, as he has gone beyond both good and bad. This does not mean that he is passive, he is active, but his activity is selfless and is directed to help others to tread the path he has trodden himself. His deed, ordinarily accepted as good, lack creative power as regard himself. Unlike the action of a whirling, his action do not react on himself as a karmic effect. His action in Pali are called kriya, means functional. Yeah, functional. Purest goal cannot further be purified, so that is just an expression. Yeah? The mental states of the four types of supramundane path consciousness, namely Sotapan, Sakadagami, Anagami, and Arahanta, though wholesome, Kusala, do not tend to accumulate fresh karma, but on the contrary, tend to a gradual cessation of the individual flux of becoming. And herewith, or therewith, is the gradual cessation of good and evil deeds. In this type of supramundane consciousness, the wisdom factor of Panya, which tends to destroy the root of karma, is predominant. While in the mundane type of consciousness, the volition or chetina, means mental intention, which produces karmic activity, is predominant. Yeah. What is the criterion for morality according to Buddhism? The answer is found in the admonition given by the Buddha to young Samanera Rahula. If there is a deed, Rahula, you wish to do, reflect us. And this one is also a useful guide for cultivator. He taught this to Rahula. Rahula is the son of the Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha. He said, if there is a deed, Rahula, you wish to do, reflect us. In this, is this deed, you have to constantly reflect, conducive to my harm or others' harm, or to that of both, then is this bad deed entailing suffering? For such a deed, you must resist. Means you must not break that type of karmic negativity. Then if there is a deed you wish to do, reflect us. Is this deed not conducive to my harm, nor to others' harm, nor to that of both? Then is this a good deed, entailing happiness? Such a deed you must do again and again. In assessing morality, a Buddhist takes into consideration the interests of both, of himself and others. Animals are not excluded. In the Karaniya Metta Sutta, the Buddha exhorts, as the mother would protect her only child, even at the risk of her own life, even so, let one cultivate boundless thought of loving kindness towards all beings. Then the Dhammapada state, all fear, punishment to all life is dear. Sorry, all fear, punishment to all of life, to all people, life is dear. Comparing them with oneself, let one neither harm nor kill. To understand the exceptionally high standard of morality the Buddha expects from his ideal disciple, one must carefully read the Dhammapada, the Sigalovada Sutta, the Vagapaja Sutta, Mangala Sutta, Metta Sutta, Parabhava Sutta, Vasala Sutta, Dhammika Sutta, etc. As a moral teaching, it excels all other ethical systems. But morality is only the beginning and not the end of Buddhism. In one sense, Buddhism is not a philosophy. In another sense, it's a philosophy of philosophies. In one sense, Buddhism is not a religion. In another sense, it's the religion of all religion. What Buddhism is? Buddhism is neither a metaphysical path nor a ritualistic path. It is neither skeptical nor dogmatic. It is neither eternalism or nihilism. It is neither self-motivation or self-indulgence. It is neither pessimistic nor optimistic, but realism. It is neither absolutely this worldly or otherworldly. It is not extrovert, but introvert. It is not theocentric, but homocentric. It is a unique path of enlightenment. The original Pali term of Buddhism is Dhamma, which literally means that which upholds or sustains him who acts in conformity with its principle and thus prevents him from falling into the willful state. There is no proper English equivalent that exactly conveys the meaning of the Pali term. The Dhamma is that which really is. It is the doctrine of reality. It is the means of deliverance from suffering and deliverance itself. Whether the Buddha arises or not, Dhamma exists from all eternity. It is the Buddha that realizes this Dhamma, whichever lies hidden from the ignorant eyes of mankind, till he, an enlightened one, comes and compassionately reveals it to the world. That's why the famous saying of the Buddha. Whether the Tathagata, which is the Buddha, appear or not, O Bhikkhu, it remains a fact, an established principle, a nature's law, that all conditioned things are transient, impermanent, anicca, sorrowful, or lead to suffering, dukkha, and that everything is anatta, non-self, empty nature, not a permanent and changing entity. This fact that the Tathagata realized, understand, and when he has realized and understand it, announces, teach, proclaim, establish, disclose, analyze, and make it clear that all conditioned things are transient, sorrowful, and that everything is anatta, empty nature, or non-self. In the Majjhika Nikaya, the Buddha said, one thing only does the Buddha teach, namely suffering and the end of all suffering. Thus is the doctrine of reality. The Udana states, just as O Bhikkhu, the mighty ocean is of one flavor, the flavor of salt, even so, O Bhikkhu, this Dhamma is of one flavor, the flavor of deliverance, means liberation of vimutti. This is the means of deliverance. The sublime Dhamma is not something apart from oneself. It is purely dependent on oneself and is to be realized by oneself. As such, the Buddha exalts. This one is very important. Abide with oneself as an island, with oneself as a refuge. Means within your phantom-length body, the truth is there. Search within, don't search outwardly. Then abide with the Dhamma as an island, with the Dhamma as a refuge. Seek not for external refuge. Dhamma is the teaching, the truth. That's why you abide within. Then you will be free. Okay, we managed to finish. So next week, chapter 16, some salient characteristics of Buddhism. Okay, who wants to do chapter 16 for our next Tuesday class? Anybody want to volunteer? Otherwise, we ask Hui Rong to choose. Alicia. Oh, supposed to be Alicia. Oh, okay, good. Alicia again. I thought she just did it. Oh, 他选的. Oh, yeah, the last one is Alicia. Okay, we wait for Alicia to come back and let her choose. Then maybe next week I will still take that one. The following one, is it Karma? Chapter 17, is it Karma? Not yet. Where PG wants to take that topic, Karma. Karma is chapter what? 18, 19. Oh, okay. So we are two more. So two more. You all let me know who wants to take that topic. Maybe WhatsApp me. Okay, do you have any question? In regards to the teaching Dhamma? Most of it I have explained to you last Tuesday. Like what you can see on the whiteboard. The whiteboard notes are just a recollection. Buddhism is the teaching of the Buddha. So it's also called Dhamma. And Dhamma is truth. Okay? So when you understand Dhamma, you understand the truth. Means you understand the secret of life. You understand the secret of life. Means both the mundane and the supramundane aspect. Means whatever you want to understand about life, you can. And this teaching is very profound because it goes direct into the mind. So, as far as the mind is concerned, you have two aspects. One is the true mind. The other one is the mundane mind. Then the Buddha talked about the ultimates of mind. So ultimates of mind, the true mind, which is the unconditioned state, he said you can realize Nibbana when you return to the source, when you can cease the mundane mind. Then this true mind will lead you to the ability to realize that state of the unconditioned, which is Nibbana. That's why he said Nibbana is one of the ultimates of mind. Then the mundane mind, he said, there are three ultimates within. That's why it's broken down into Rupa, Citta, and Cittasikas. So Rupa is the mental form within the mind, the perception aggregates. Then Citta is the consciousness itself. Actually, the consciousness and the content become the citta. But citta seekers are all the concomitant or mind states within. So these three are the ultimates of the mundane mind. So when you understand the mundane mind, you will understand these three. And these three is very, very complicated. Very beautiful too. The most difficult to understand is cittasika and citta. Mental form is easy, rupa. It's the external form that you bring back into the mind through your perception aggregate. Then just now in the teaching, they try to explain many things, but they are all covered within this summary. This summary. And this Dhamma is a very, very unique teaching. It explains to you all of truth, both the mundane and supramundane. But of course, mainly centered on spiritual aspect. Whereas the non-spiritual aspect, which is the scientific, that one, I think science has already went quite deep into it. The physical law, nature's physical law of nature, and the biological law of nature. Then the other three spiritual laws are taught by the Buddha under his teaching. They are the law of karma, karma niyama. Then law of mind, how mind functions. Our mind, especially the mundane mind, it follows certain law. The Buddha called it the law of dependent origination. Paticca samuppada. Then the last part is nature's law of truth. Dhamma niyamas. All of the essential Dhamma, the essential truth that the Buddha taught. So when you understand these three right views, you will become very, very different. You will become very wise. It's just like the scientists, when they understand the first two, physical law of nature and biological law of nature, they progress very fast in the field of science and technology, and they can understand many, many things. So spiritually it's the same. When you break free through your comprehension of the three spiritual laws, when you can understand them, you are like the scientists. you really progress very far within the field of spirituality. You will reach the pinnacle of it. Then you will realize the enlightenment, which is beyond thought, beyond mind. And you can realize the unconditioned. Okay. Any question on this topic? Anything else that you want to maybe ask or add on? You can. So this topic on the teaching of the Buddha, is it clear now? Maybe I ask you the other way around. What do you understand of the Buddha Dharma or his teaching? What have you learned? What we have gone through is a general explanation of this teaching, understand that? But what I have taught and shared with you are the essential Dhamma, which are very deep and very profound, and I have linked them all up for you so that you can make use of it in life itself, to understand life, to develop the understanding, to cultivate, to liberate your mind, to develop the wisdom, to live the good life. So all this, they are not taught in what we discuss in that topic. That topic is a very general topic. It just describes to you how beautiful this teaching is. But it doesn't go into the detail. So what you should do now is to complement this. You should read the Heart Sutta. Then you go into the detail. Then you understand this word, Dhamma, the teaching of the Buddha, very clearly. And when you understand, you can put it into practice. That's why pariyatti will lead to patipatti. Then after that, you will realize the enlightenment. Then you get to live the third phase of Dhamma, which is pativeda. You get to live the life of a noble being, enlightened being. Okay? So essential Dhamma, go back and reflect on it, contemplate on it. Or try to write it down, see whether you can recall or not. Roughly, if people ask you, what is the Buddha's teaching? What did the Buddha teach? How are you going to answer him? What did the Buddha teach? What is the essence of his teaching? Of course, you will quote the Four Noble Truths, isn't it? You have to start from there, isn't it? So that is the secret of his teaching, because that is the essence of his teaching. But you will be able, from that Four Noble Truths, if you understand, really understand the Four Noble Truths, all of the other teaching, the essential Dhamma, they actually spin off from there. Do you understand? So you don't have to remember anything. Just this Four Noble Truths. And this Four Noble Truths, if you have put them into cultivation, you don't have to remember. Because they are related to life. And you will know what they are. And when you know what they are, through the understanding, all of his essential Dhamma come out. Whatever he teach from that Four Noble Truths, it come out. So, key to understanding the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha Dhamma, is the Four Noble Truths. And this Four Noble Truths, you have to understand it very thoroughly. We are the three turning. The Buddha also went through that, he said. Then when you have that understanding, all of his teachings spring forth from there, spin off from there. And you don't have to remember anything. From there, all the teaching come. Go back and try. You can do that, you'll be very good. Then your cultivation will not deviate. You will know what you are doing in the name of meditation. Then you are very clear about what you are doing in the midst of life. Then what is daily mindfulness? What is meditation? Everything will fall into place once you understand that. If you can't, means you have not understood the teaching, the Four Noble Truths. You want to go through or not as a revision? We still got 20 minutes. Ah, yes. Ah, yeah, yeah. Use the mic. Use the mic, yes. Use the mic. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So, we don't make it an effort to memorize.
Don't.
So, we keep it in our subconscious
mind. No.
So, like, let's just say, every day, every time you drill it, but actually it's in the back of the
that one
mind.
Is,
so when
that one is
it,
knowledge. That one is knowledge. Where you try to remember. Do you see the point or not? That one is still knowledge. Where you try to remember. What I'm trying to advise you is, when you develop the knowledge, then you reflect and contemplate and ask yourself, what are these? Let's take, for example, the Four Noble Truths, okay?
Yeah.
The second turning, when you reflect and contemplate, then you will come to understand more clearly what these Four Noble Truths are, especially the First Noble Truth. Yeah? Take, for example, First Noble Truth. So when you really go through it, what will you develop as understanding? The eight realities. You know the eight realities that the Buddha talked about. He said, these are the reality of life and existence. If you are a living being that lives long enough, you will have to confront this eight reality. And this eight reality covers all of the mundane mind, the mundane conditioned world. Every aspect of it. Yeah. All of life is within this eight reality. So this eight reality, if you go through it, the first four is related to your physical body, anasana. Birth, old age, sickness, and death. So this one no need to remember, anasana, definitely there. Then if you really reflect, contemplate, and go into life in the daily mindfulness, then you realize the fifth one is separation from loved one and prized possession. And every moment, every instant, you see them happening to you, to your loved one, to other people, to the world. Like the first four. Birth is everywhere. Getting old, everywhere. Getting sick, more common. You yourself also go through. Then death, every moment, every instant, there is death. Not necessarily death of a human being. Death of every breath that goes in and come out. Death of every thought that arises and passes away. Every pulse of life, the birth and death. The blinking of your eye or whatever. So you see the coming and the going. The birth and the death. The appearing and the disappearing. So all these are characteristics of impermanence. Then when you see this reality, the next one is when you are with people whom you don't like. Every day, human beings experience that. They become emotional, unhappy. Then they go to office, they don't like. Even if they are the boss, they still got another boss up there. Understand? Like, if you are the GM, above the GM, general manager, there is still the executive director. Understand? Then the executive director is still subject to the managing director or the CEO. Then this CEO is still subject to the board of director, understand? And the board of director is answerable to the shareholder, understand? So there is always this type of thing. Then when you are with people whom you don't like because you cannot cope with life, with situation, then there are a lot of people that give you problem, that can cause problem to you, that can have higher authority than you. Sometimes they can even take advantage of you or bully you. So these are the conditions when you are with people whom you don't like mother-in-law, then the stepmother, stepfather, and all these things. They can really torture you, torment you. Then your employer, your subordinate or those who are in higher authority and position to control you. Then the seventh one is when you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, expectation in life are not. So if you are mindful, if you are heedful, if you have gone through life with all this understanding, then the first seven reality is every day you encounter, understand? In reality, in life. So you don't have to remember. I never try to remember all this, because this is part of life. And I saw it, I see it. I don't have to remember. If what I share with you, I have to remember, I cannot share. Do you know what is memory or not? I have to retrieve them, you know. Right? When I retrieve them, it's not my understanding. It don't come from my nature. It don't come from my heart. That is not Dhamma. That's why Dhamma is pachetang. Can be realized by the wise, each for themselves. Yeah. Then the other one is, it leads inward. Opanaiko. If it doesn't lead inward to your heart, to your nature, it's also not the right Dhamma. That's why this Dhamma, which is connected to your form and mind, which is within your nature, it will be there all the time. Like I told Song, don't have to remember. You have means you have. You don't have means you don't have. When you have, the understanding will come out by itself. That's why I don't prepare anything. I don't try to remember anything. Otherwise, I cannot teach. It will not be smooth, understand, if I try to remember and take note and all those things. So all this is Dhamma. So what you try to ask as a question is, if you don't commit to memory, first thing first, you cannot remember. So at first you thought, maybe I don't store in my conscious memory. You said you store in your subconscious. Just now you mentioned that. No, Dhamma is not like that. Initially when you cultivate the first phase of Dhamma, Pariyatti, the understanding of the teaching, you have to try to recall, reflect, contemplate, and maybe commit to memory first. Understand? Not? Because you still cannot understand. When you cannot understand, you cannot see them in life. But the moment you reflect and contemplate and understand it deeper, as you reflect and contemplate, you recollect through life experience what is birth. What is it like to get old, get sick? And what is it like to be separated from loved one? And what is death and all those things? So when you are in that situation, like when you fall sick, when you experience aging, getting old, your senses failing you, your organ failing you, then you observe them. You are mindful of them. Then you understand the deep meaning behind what the Buddha said, birth is suffering. Old age, sickness and death is suffering. Very clear one. Yeah, you feel them. You are mindful. You are sensitive. Then all this no need to remember. Then you tell yourself, before I confront them, I better develop the clear understanding before it's too late. Then you would straight away link it to the five daily contemplation. The Buddha said, every day I must reflect and contemplate so that this understanding is there. And the first three contemplation is related to the first noble truth reality, the first four. The Buddha said, this body of mind you must reflect is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die, finally. Then whatever that is of the nature to be born is of the nature to cease and die. That's why birth, old age, sickness and death, they are all related. And you have to reflect. This physical body is not me because it's made up of element. Element goes the way of nature. That's why the Buddha say, this one go the way of nature. It's of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. It cannot stay forever. You cannot say, tell this body, don't get old, don't get sick, don't die. Impossible. Yeah, this one go the way of nature. So you should reflect this way. Then you reflect, all that which I think I own, my loved one, my possession, my prized possession, my property, my money, my business, my whatever antics and those things, or my car, my beautiful wife and all those things. Or my children, my loved ones. The Buddha said, you have to reflect. All these are condition arising, dependent originating. They don't really belong to you. They were separate from you one day. When condition is there, they arise. They belong to you. When conditions is to be, it doesn't belong to you anymore. Sometimes your breath stops, your entity erased, everything is no longer yours. That's the reality of separation. And when you reflect and contemplate every day, this understanding is so strong. Then the first noble truth, the irreality, no need to remember, understand? No? That every day you reflect, contemplate, and you put it into practice. And in your daily mindfulness, you see them. You saw them. You witnessed them. Then you have gratitude towards your nature. You thank your good karma for giving you such good condition. Then even if condition were not so conducive, you know there are causes and conditions behind, and mainly the law of karma. So you need to ask for forgiveness. You ask for forgiveness. You need to repent. Repent and determine not to violate this law of karma again. So you determine to follow the advice of the Buddha. Keep the precept. Avoid all evil. Then cultivate mindfulness, Noble Eightfold Path, to develop virtue, goodness, wholesomeness. Then purify your mind through meditation, through heedfulness, through mindfulness. So all this will come. Then the last contemplation is what? The number five. Huh? What is that? The first right view, what is that? What did the Buddha say, the last contemplation? This is the most important one. Did you do or not every day? It's related to your karma, isn't it? What did the Buddha say? We are all born of our karma. And you are what you have. And this one is the most important. If my life depends entirely on karma, what am I doing here? I have to take care of karma, isn't it? That's why I train my mind to be heedful, to be mindful. Otherwise, I can't even take care of karma. To take care of karma, I need to keep my precepts. Without mindfulness, how to keep precepts? So all these are related. The five daily contemplation bring forth the Noble Eightfold Path. First path factor of right view. When I have this right view, I know why I have to follow the advice of the Buddha. If I need to repent, I need to. If I need to ask for forgiveness, then my life will change. When I follow the advice of the Buddha, I already start to transform myself. My personality, my character, my karma, everything will change. That's how you improve your life. That's how you develop the understanding of cultivation. Then you don't have to believe in feng shui. Go and see all those medium and all those. No need. Take care of karma. Everything is taken care of. Like I always say, if you take care of mind take care of karma, karma take care of your life. So you no need to have job security or whatever security. No need. You take care of karma, karma take care of your life. Everything is secure. With faith, with understanding. You trust your karma. You will not lose the thing that you earn righteously. Where you don't cheat, you don't deceive. But if you don't act accordance with Noble Eightfold Path, you act through crooked means, evil means to achieve whatever you crave for, then you get into trouble. Then karma will hit back. That's how cultivation is to be developed. Not through memory. What you want to remember? No need to remember. Reflect on it, contemplate on it. Then every day you do that, every day you see that, you need to remember. You don't need to remember, is it? So this is what cultivation is all about. Thank you so much for your good questions. Sadhu to you. Then Yun Chan, you got a Buddha Rupang. She hold custodian for you. He brought here, very nice. What macha? Sadhu. Then continue.
What you've been telling us.
You push it out.
I phrase my question wrongly.
Okay.
Or maybe I the word subconscious incorrect.
Fair enough.
So
yeah.
I apologize.
No problem. As long as you understand. Because your question is very important. I think not only you. I think a lot of people don't understand. But to them, you must remember. No? Even Song, last time, after he connected, he keep on asking me, Patio, how come sometimes I still have this problem. Will that come from the thought, understand or not? I say, you already have the understanding. He said, no. When I encounter certain thing, I still have this problem. That one come from the thought. Because you didn't silence. You didn't silence your mind and act. If you silence your mind and act, the wisdom will come out. The thing that he has realized will come out. But because he used memory. He said, how come like that? Sometimes still like that, sometimes not like that. Who asked that question? It's your thought. But you don't trust your nature. You don't know how to silence. When you silence, you act. It's spontaneous. It will just understand. It will know how to act. There is no more thought referring to memory. And through memory check, what must I do? What did Brother Teo say? What did the Buddha say? Then you are not acting at all. You are acting according to memory, according to knowledge. And that is not the real Dhamma. The real Dhamma is you act with wisdom. And what is wisdom? Right view. What are the right view? What did the Buddha say? What did Brother Teo say? Law of karma. Like the Buddha said, whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. And what are these causes and conditions? They are your karma, understand? 100%, you are born of it, have to eat, conditioned and supported by it, and you are what you are, every moment, every instant, because karma. So it's definitely something to do with karma. That's why when Asaji told Sariputta, he straight away become a Sotapan. He said, my teacher just teach this simple thing, two stanzas, he said, whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. And these causes and conditions, my teacher has taught me. Finish. He become a Sotapan. My nature also knew. If I heard that, I also transform. Because it's very direct, isn't it? Within the conditioned world, everything that arise, there must be causes and conditions behind that. True or not? So these causes and conditions, the Buddha already told you, has to be karma. All of us are born of karma. So if it's karma, means you have right view. Then you know how to act. Correct or not? How do you act? You don't go and act, get angry, stir your mind. If it's karma, means what? You reap what you sow. In the past, I must have done this thing to people. That's why now people hit you, kow-kow, understand or not? Then you don't go and blame people anymore. Don't go and react anymore. Understand? Then you have the understanding. You accept him for what he is. When you can see things as they are and accept them for what they are, you become at peace. Then you act with what? Noble Eightfold Path. Speak the right speech. Act accordingly, righteously. Then have right thought based on right view. Need to apologize? Apologize. Sorry. I really don't mean it.
I will share a personal.
Very good.
Life.
Experience.
It was a problem, okay, but it's not a problem anymore.
Sadhu, very good.
Like you said, we go back to the law of karma. My son was a problem to me. Because my son is like that.
I know.
But now I felt that it is his karma. And it's also my karma.
Yes, correct.
So I have accepted him for what he is.
Then you are at peace.
I'm at peace. He is at peace.
This is also mutual respect. Understand?
And because I have accepted what he is, he's now able to be more open.
And communicate with you very well.
And he's able to bring a friend back. But he did ask me for permission.
No problem.
Why not? It's better to have him at home than go him go out
gallivanting. And don't know what they are doing.
So anyway, I'm at peace. He's at peace.
That's why that one helped you a lot.
It's all due to karma. Once you accept it, I think
then you are at peace. Help a lot. Because you used to have this problem many, many years ago, I remember. At the first retreat, isn't it? Because I saw at the first retreat, suppose we don't know how many days, I think it's our usual 9 days. after the fourth day or fifth day, I forgot already. And suddenly she saw me. Then she approached me and said, "Brett Teo, can I discuss something with you?" I said, "Can." Then I said, "We go there." You know, when you go into the meditation hall, the main shrine on the first floor, we got the left and the right, isn't it? Left is lady toilet, isn't it? Correct? Not? Right is male toilet. So male toilet there are normally less people and there are less male. So I said, "Okay, we go there and discuss." Then she started to relate those problems to me about the son. That time I can see he was so sad, so emotional, so affected. Yeah, to her, it's like a shock. That reality she cannot accept. Then I say, "You got two choices. First choice is what? Like normal people. React, cannot accept, become very angry, emotional. Then suffering arises. Second way is what? Accept him for what he is. Then talk to him nicely. Explain to him, where you have the Dhamma. Then he will be willing to share whatever he has with you. Where he has faith. Because you tell him, your life, you decide, you don't worry. Mom is here to advise. Where I'm more experienced. I experience life more. So don't worry. Whatever in life, you are my only son. I'm your only mother. We can talk. Be open about it. Then what is more important is, when you understand, your problem is gone. My problem is gone. Then we become more beautiful. We understand each other very much better. Then that is mutual respect. That is love. That is understanding. Then there is peace of mind, like what she experienced now. So life can be resolved with understanding, with the Dhamma, with the Noble Eightfold, anything, not necessarily mother and son, understand? It can be spouse, among children, brother, sister, friend, neighbor, or whatever the condition and the situation. Very good. Thank you so much. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Just now I heard the alarm. Oh, you still got? Okay.
Just wanted to share a joke. Now I have a son and a son-in-law.
Sadhu. Very good. Sadhu. So you understand, life is like that. What's wrong? Having a son and a son-in-law is very good. You all only got a son and a daughter-in-law. This one is unique. And so beautiful. That's why when you understand, when that thought, that try to condition you, shameful that one no more. I tell you, you are bliss, you are beautiful. Understand not? What is that one? That one is the thought that creates suffering, misery, paise. What is there to paise? Paise in English is like shy. What is there to be shy? The reality is, and when you confront truth, reality, you become beautiful. Your understanding free you. Oh, embarrassing, not shy, embarrassed, good. Thank you, Yujan. Luckily, you correct my English word. My English word, I always use the Hokkien, paise, 不好意思, kensiao, his one is kensiao, embarrassed. But what I mean was shy, paise, like, ayo, this type of thing, how can you tell people, understand or not? Not normal. Paise la. Of course, the word embarrassed also correct la. Also indirectly like paise la. But shy means the meaning is not so strong. Understand la? Like this child of mine is very shy. Means cannot interact with people. Understand la? But when you did something, I think it's embarrassment. Your word is correct. You are embarrassed. So that one come from the thought. Always remember, the thought always create division, create fear in you, create negativity in you. Why do you believe the thought? Tell the thought, no more. I have gone through life. I have had enough of your duality. Understand? Because that one comes from the egoic mind. The egoic mind wants to protect itself. That's why it wants to hide all the secret that he doesn't want people to know. Understand? But reality is, proof is, why are you shy? Who is shy? The thought is shy. Why you want to believe the thought? Thought is for you to use. Use it correctly, appropriately, to become beautiful, to break free all this embarrassment, shyness, and honesty. You can use it to develop wholesomeness and understanding. That's why they say a lot of things happen in life because you don't know how to break the ice. You know what is break the ice or not? Start the communication with your children, with your loved ones. A lot of people suffer because they cannot communicate and they have a preconceived negativity perception. Sometimes they keep it inside. They don't want to say it out. They don't want to clear it. They don't want to be truthful about it. That's how they suffer. And when they suffer, the other side also suffer. I hope tonight you all learn something. Yeah, this part is not easy for human being. But when you have the Dhamma, nothing. Understand? So what? You want to laugh, you laugh. Like I told you when I was young, my mother make the shirt, the sleeve long and short. I wear. I'm not scared of people laughing at me and saying all those things about me. So what? That's what I am. When I understand, I'm proud of myself. My mother make it for me. Yes, it's not proper. So what? And I like to do things that is against society's convention. The opposite. Always like that one. Yeah. People shy, I not shy. No. People want to go for prestige and all things. I cannot. I don't want fame and all those things. No point. But this is the egoic mind, the craving mind. That's why when you understand the truth is the opposite of reality. Remember, I always tell you, logic is always not the truth. The truth is always the opposite of what humanity think or conceive or preconceive. So these are very important Dhamma, very deep and thorough Dhamma that you never experience. Because your mundane mind is still very active. Your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your thought processes are still very, very active. The habitual tendency and all those things. Not until your wisdom reach that level and that stability where you can see beyond all this, then you realize form and mind, no reality. That personality, that egoic mind is a false entity, not real. Okay? Yeah, sadhu, eh? Thank you so much. Yeah? So sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we now share merit, transfer merit, yeah? Otherwise you will miss your food. Yeah. Let us recall to mind, yeah? All of the wholesomeness that we have developed. Then we shall share this merits with all beings. Akasata Chobumata Deva Naga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anamoditwa Sirang Rakan Tulokasasana Itta Wata Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadat Sabbebe Anamodan Sampati Siddhya Idang Menya Tinang Hotu Sukita Hontunya Tayo Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadu sadu sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Gem, then we end.